Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for January 17th, 2019. Halfway through the month of January already, 2019, and moving forward. A few announcements. First of all, I had a piece that I wrote published on another webpage, which is somewhat rare, but anyway, it's a page hosted by Robert David Steele. And originally, I had written a piece suggesting to the president, President Trump, that is, that Robert David Steele be placed in a position he was considered, I don't know what the current status is, but in the position of Secretary of Defense. And he's the only person that I'm aware of that has written a piece, a very extensive piece, of what has to happen with the Department of Defense. Right now, the United States is in a very, very serious trouble. And I talked about this before. The China and Russia have built space capabilities. The United States has stuck its neck out and started developing space capability. This happened a long time ago, and so China and Russia have responded. And quite frankly, you can build very, very primitive weapons, offensive weapons, and they might be considered defensive weapons if someone believes there's some kind of imminent danger. What we consider to be offensive weapons would really could be considered defensive weapons, in that they would destroy the offensive weapons of another country. So in that sense, being defensive. But it's not hard to take out satellites, for example. And the United States depends heavily, well, not heavily, 100%, on GPS and other military satellites. The United States military cannot go to the bathroom. It cannot literally cannot go to the bathroom without a GPS reading, without some kind of accounting and feedback into a computerized system. And it's all wonderful, except that it is absolutely worthless if these computer systems go down, or if the GPS system goes down, or any fraction of it goes down, because GPS depends on a number of satellites and a number of specialized satellites, but taking these satellites out is a matter of child's play. And China and Russia have the capability of doing that. So before we spend too much time getting fancy-pantsy about going into outer space, the Department of Defense has a great need in the United States to have an objective view of outer space. To just go willy-nilly throwing money at outer space. And the biggest mistake would be to put this under the existing Air Force structure, because there it's nothing but the good old boy network. The contracts would go out, the money would be made, and it would be all in secret. So you, the American public, would not have any clue of what was being developed. And I can guarantee you, it would not provide good defense. And, you know, it's just very simple. So anyway, I had originally written this article as a piece recommending that the president consider Robert David Steele as head of the Department of Defense. But at any rate, it got edited and somewhat re-edited. And then I was asked to write a piece just based on seven major topics. And so this article is published. It's on a website. Let me quick pull this up so I can see it. And it's linked from my webpage. So the easiest way to find this is go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, scroll down to the center column, and there's first it talks about the Colburn. I'm talking about the Colburn being available from the Chaldean Trust in e-format. And then you go below that, it says regular guest appearances. And then right before that, right after that, it says, my letter to President Trump was recently published on the following webpage. Please read. And there's a link, https://5betaiota.net 2018 12 Or you could also look up James McCanney Reflections for the President is the title of the article. Anyway, go click on that and read it. I think most of you who know me possibly would already understand that I talk about these topics, but it's a more concise rendition, hopefully that will be read by the President on these various topics. So anyway, just a quick little announcement there. Also, there's an interview by Roger Stone by none other than Tyrell Ventura. That's Jesse Ventura's son. And the name of the show is Buzzsawed. Now, this is from 2013, November 24, 2013. But it is, and of course, this is all before the Trump election, the 2016 presidential election, which will be obvious when you listen to the interview. But it is about a book that Roger Stone has written dealing with, here's the title, just to give you a clue, LBJ, of course, Lyndon Baines Johnson. So, but here's the title of the video. It's on YouTube. It's LBJ and the Killing of JFK with Roger Stone. So it's an interview by Tyrell Ventura. The TV station, so to speak, the internet station is called The Lip TV, L-I-P. And so once again, I suggest going and listening to this interview in its entirety. So once again, the title LBJ and the Killing of JFK with Roger Stone. And so go look that up, listen to it. There's about a million views since 2013, but really, really an important interview. And so I'm going to continue a little bit on that topic tonight. So what I'd recommend is you go listen to that entire interview with Roger Stone and then come back and listen to this. Or if you're familiar with my reporting on these types of topics, you will understand that, yeah, history has been changed dramatically by the Bushes, by the Clintons, by the CIA, and by forces in the United States that really should have never been forces. But a lot of it started with the assassination of John Kennedy. And, of course, the standard story and, you know, the fake news, talk about the beginning of fake news, that was the epitome of constructed news. And as Roger Stone points out, every president since then in some way was related to that assassination. And, of course, the drug issues, the terrible condition of the United States right now. Where would we be if, Kennedy had lived? And Roger Stone points that out also, that we would have had normalized conditions with Cuba way back then. There was no reason for isolating Cuba at that point. But if you understand the banking world, this is the point at which the banking world takes over the United States in a vicious manner, where Kennedy was going to get rid of the central bank, the European-controlled Federal Reserve, and was getting rid of the CIA, its police force. But the point I'm leading up to here, of course, is that science today and science news reporting, including NASA, the National Science Foundation, the National Institute of Health, and I could go down the laundry list of other federal agencies dealing with science, medicine, health, space science, aerospace technology, etc. And what you find is this is totally controlled. And what the public sees is totally controlled. So the public is given a basically contrived set of scientific ideas, I just saw an article, for example, on dark matter. This is the most convoluted, ridiculous lunacy that I have ever seen. And they can't tell you what dark matter is, what its properties are, where it is located, what it acts like. They say that the forces that dark matter produce are variable, but they can't define them, and that if there's matter present, then the dark matter scurries away. What they're talking about is absolute nonsense. And now they're talking about, well, could it possibly heat up and change the properties of dark matter? Lunacy that's going on within our university system, the idea of the Big Bang and dark matter and the general relativity and the Hubble constant and the redshift and the what is known as the microwave background radiation is absolute lunacy. And I've said this before on the air. What they are seeing, the microwave background radiation that they're detecting around the solar system, is nothing more than the nebular ion cloud. It's a cloud of material that's pushed back by the solar wind. We see these around other stars. We can measure the microwave background radiation coming from these disks that surround other stars, and that's what they're measuring around our star. It's not a remnant of the Big Bang. An asteroid just turned into a comet. They don't know why. The standard explanation, an asteroid must have hit it, is lunacy, because it goes on and on and on. But the point is that all of this is contrived, and it keeps the American public stupid. It keeps the American public at bay, because an intelligent, scientifically astute American public would also question and be able to basically see through this, that the news is contrived. It has been contrived for a very long time. Okay, so I'm not going to dwell on this too long. But that leads me into the next two topics, one of Brexit and one of the U.S. government shutdown, and a little bit of the China trade war, which affects me. I'm being affected by the China trade war, but I can tell you that it's something that had to happen because of the absolute theft that was going on across the ocean there, with China stealing technology at will, basically taking anything from a ping golf club to high-tech rocket science or high-tech space hardware and designs, and just stealing it. So it's something that's really necessary, and in terms of hurting the United States, I can tell you from firsthand experience that it is hurting China and the businesses of China. So we'll see where that goes. But Brexit, my prediction is very simple. March 29th of this year, England will break away from the European Union. It's already, that date has been set. The recent May, this Mrs. May, who's the Prime Minister of England, she may be around a bit longer. If she's there, she will just guarantee that Brexit will happen because of ineptitude. She tried to write a compromise, if you were not aware of that, and 2 days ago on the 15th of January, that failed by a miserably huge margin. So I expect England to fully break away from the European Union. It'll be followed by France, other countries. When I was on the John Moore show yesterday, John was talking about many of the Eastern European countries breaking away also. This means new monetary systems, England going back to the pound. And if people are wise, they will see it as a beneficial move that over the long term will be beneficial. But of course, as with any bureaucracy, trying to change it overnight is going to be somewhat of a disaster. But regarding the U.S. shutdown, as far as I'm concerned, let it go on. Keep the U.S. government shut down, heck, forever. I don't care. I just think that, the essential services of the government, if they're essential, they can continue. But if I were an employee of the government and not receiving a paycheck, I would be the first one out of the starting blocks to find another job, because the workforce can absorb lots and lots of people. But the first person out there to look for a private sector job in industry or whatever, in an employment environment where there's zero unemployment, I would be the first guy down the street to look for a new job. And forget about this government thing, because even if they hire them back, there could be other shutdowns. There could be this shutdown may not end. So anyway, just my two cents worth there. But in terms of the U.S. economy, if the government is the main source of input into the economy, then we're all hurting. Just like if the service industry is a main component of the economy, then we are hurting. It used to be back in the Obama years that the cell phone industry, I mean, these were the major industries. These should be service industries, should be little pimples on the behind of the entire economy. And under Obama, they were the major industries. So that just shows you how ridiculous things were back then and how much things have changed now. Just in a quick announcement, the Chinese lander that allegedly landed on the rear side of the moon, and I say allegedly because there has been no corroboration by anybody. We are depending solely on China's statement that they did this without any second or third party independent party proof. That is not the way science works. It requires third party, second party, independent verification. There is none. So the claim that China landed on the far side of the moon is a claim. It's not verified. And in spite of the fact of the news reporting this, it's simply not verified. But they're claiming that they have sprouted cotton seeds on the far side of the moon. Well, I don't suspect I'll be buying my Fruit of the Loom underwear from cotton grown on the far side of the moon anytime soon. But that's interesting. It's not that seeds have not been sprouted before. Of course, they are in containers. There's no air on the moon, and so these are sprouting in containers. So it's not surprising. People have sprouted seeds in orbit around Earth in zero gravity before, and so I'm not sure why the major issue here of growing them on the moon in a container. But anyway, that's the announcement. And as I said, there's an asteroid. It's called 6478 GAULT, G-A-U-L-T, which turned into a comet this week. So it's very interesting to see. But there again, this is the plasma discharge comet model at work. And the best explanation that NASA can come up with is that an asteroid hit it. Well, and if something hit it, you might see some debris, but developing a nice lineal comet tail anti-sunward direction is not the result of something hitting it. It's just not the way things work. And so now I'm going to take a few minutes to promote, self-promote, if you will, my new book that's going to be released on February 13th on the John Moore Show. John asked me when I was on the air, he said, this is a while ago, he said, James, if you ever have a new book release, he would be honored to do the book release. And so I said, yeah, that's great. There was a time when I released all my books on the Coast to Coast AM show. But that ended, if you haven't noticed, I have not been on that show for years. And everything I talked about, they have their little make-up pretend specialists who are not specialists. They're just people that somehow pretend they're scientific or whatever. So I have not been on that show for years, and it's too bad, because even though it's in a sense like swimming with the sharks, it was another venue, and I enjoyed being on there with George and etc. But so I'm not sure what happened there, but clearly my message was not welcome, and they wanted some other kind of message. But that, of course, the station, Clear Channel, etc., is a very controlled station, and my message was not welcome. So anyway, whatever, life in the big city. Then my Calculate Primes book, I released with an interview with Brad Walton on WCCO, and Brad was also a good friend of mine, and he had been waiting. He knew that I was writing a new book, had been waiting for the release of Calculate Primes, and when it came out, he said he read it, and he saw the DVD, the three-hour DVD that goes with it, and he said, I have to interview this. He was so excited about finally understanding prime numbers. And, of course, the issue with calculating prime numbers is that it is done by addition, no multiplication involved. And, of course, that was the release of that book. And then I've had other books released since then, the book on water, the comets book, the white paper on the Nazca lines, and many other, the DVDs that have come out, the college university level DVD number 4, dealing with astrophysics, astronomy, and space science. So a lot of new releases have come out. But this current book that's coming out, really, I finished almost in August of 2017. And it would have been done, but I took a little hiatus from work, took part in just being social, a human being. And as a result, then I started in earnest with the pursuit of the X Prize, which took me another year and a half. So this book literally sat almost finished on the shelf for that entire period of time. And so now I'm getting back to filling in some of the details, some of the introduction in the book, and have had it completed, ready for distribution. And so now, over the next month till its official release, I'll be hopefully cleaning it up a little bit, doing some of that editing. And the people that order now, the point is, it's available for pre-sale right now. And the price is $24.95. And that's not just this book. You're going to get a couple other texts along with it, and then some other background material. So it's quite a bit of material along with this book. And then also I'll be presenting some paid casts that go along with this, so you'll get those also if you're not a paid cast member. So at any rate, the price of this, and then even if people might get the paid cast as part of their subscription, they will get it as a composite package when this is distributed. And the point in pre-ordering, of course, you don't know what the title is, you don't know what the topic is, but the point of pre-ordering is that you will receive this as a downloadable item on the 13th of February, the day of the release. People who wait until they find out what the topic is, etc., to order, will not receive it until we wade through all of the orders, and this will be in a downloadable format. So people that pre-order, now there's other ways to get the book. You can order $350 worth of products on the sales page, and this will be included. There's a product that I've just redefined. It's called the Complete Survival Water Filter and Book Package. It'll be included in that. And also there's options when you go down to the book section of my sales page, the book CD, DVD section, etc. It will be included there, and you can purchase it there as an individual item or as part of the libraries. And so I'm very excited about this particular book. It's a long-awaited piece in addition to my right now rather healthy set of publications. And this one I'm very, very proud of, the work that came out of this effort. And actually the work that's, this book is one stage. This is, when I write a book, it's typically encapsulating a certain amount of information that I feel that is ready for public consumption. But the work in the background is ongoing, and so there will be future work coming out along this same topic. But I'm very, very proud of what the accomplishments that are going into this current book. So I would encourage you all to take a look at the pre-purchase of the book. Like I say, that means you will get it on the day of February 13th, this coming February, the release date. And also, if you're not a member of my paid cast, join that. I'm currently reviewing the book Calculate Primes, and its follow-on book Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. So anyway, very important information there in both of those books. And that's what I'm concentrating now in January, reviewing those books in my paid cast. And that'll be followed by The Diamond Principle, etc. So you have to read my books to really get something out of the paid cast. The paid casts do not repeat what is in the books. They're additional material to put it into perspective, to give you a current view. And also, the reason for reviewing my books and my work with the paid cast is to put them into perspective for future audiences that might come in 50 or 100 or potentially 1,000 years, because people are going to realize that the science that is being distributed to the public is just completely bogus. It couldn't possibly be true. And my science will be at the forefront. And so it's important to have people understand the historical perspective, the historical significance of my work versus standard science, with the baloney that you're fed if you see textbooks or you go to school or you go to university. It's just absolutely absurd what they're teaching there. And, you know, I'm sorry if you're paying a lot of money to get a degree. I hope you get a good job when you're done. But what they're trying to teach you in terms of science or the way the world works, etc. Now, let me just clarify that. If you go to Physics 101 and you're doing experiments with balls rolling down an inclined plane, or you're doing electronic experiments with transistors, you are mixing chemicals in a test tube and seeing results. Okay, that's all basic, well-proven science. But you're not going to get a good job based on that. What I'm talking about is space science and geology and weather and earth science and a lot of baloney regarding, say, global climate change, where, you know, it's such flimsy science. You know, and unfortunately, the global climate scientists, for example, all they do is stick a thermometer out the window, measure a temperature. They're lazy, lazy scientists. They're trying to measure with a very small amount of data, something like temperature change. Well, temperature has nothing to do with heat content, and I've explained that a million times. So trying to measure temperatures and then give temperature results is absolutely meaningless. And people, that's one of the problems, is that the general public is not scientifically astute enough to understand these subtleties. That by measuring the temperature, and let me just give a quick, brief example of this. Take two boxes. This is basic, simple, third grader can understand it. Take two boxes exactly the same size, fill them full of air, and so that they're the same temperature, the exact same composition of air in both boxes, they're the same temperature, etc. Okay, so then determine the amount of heat content in the box. Okay, so they would be the same. All conditions in the boxes are the same. But now take one box and add humidity. It's at the same temperature as the other box, but the box with the humidity has a higher heat content. There's more energy in that box. Now let's do something. Let's lower the temperature in the box with the humidity in it, and you can lower it to a certain degree and still have more energy, heat energy, and heat is a form of energy. You can have more heat energy in the box with the lower temperature. So my point is the temperature has nothing to do with global warming. They're mixing terms. Global warming implies temperature, and what they should be measuring is the heat content. And that is based on all kinds of conditions that are not measured in simply measuring temperature. So by simply sticking a thermometer in something and measuring its temperature, now they're claiming, I just saw an article claiming that the temperatures have been rising over the last 2 years. Well, there again, temperature, where do they take the temperature? Out at the airport in downtown, where there's more heat accumulation due to cement, etc. You can go out in the countryside, go 10 minutes out into the country, and the temperature is 5 degrees cooler. But that's not where they're measuring the temperature. So anyway, it's so convoluted in such rinky-dink science, but you know, they're trying to push an agenda, and it's very successful because there are people who are pushing the global climate change agenda. But here's the bottom line. I'm for green. I'm pretty much a tree hugger myself, but I'm for an agenda that starts reducing oil usage and nuclear fuel usage. In the 30 to 40 years of global climate change propaganda and jumping up and down and screaming, not a single iota of energy has been reduced. Think about it. Of all of the clamoring that has gone on over the greenhouse effect in global warming and global climate change, not a single thing has ever happened. Not a single ounce of gasoline or nuclear fuel or natural gas or coal usage has gone down. So it has not accomplished a thing. And that's the whole point. To take some political football that's not going to solve anything and bounce it around and have everybody talking about it, everybody concerned about it. So if you're a global climate change aficionado, you've read all the newspapers, you've believed all of the tripe that you've read, look at what it's accomplished. Nothing. Zero. Nada. Blank. Nothing. It has not accomplished anything. So anyway, keep on doing what you're doing, and you're going to keep on getting what you've gotten. Nothing. It hasn't changed a thing. So, whatever. But anyway, back to just a little bit of note on my book. The book is not about climate change. I'll just tell you one thing it's not about. But once again, a monumental step in presenting information to the public in this upcoming release. Okay, so anyway, just go to my webpage, all the information there on the sales page, jmccsci.com. A little bit on health here. Now, you might hear my voice a little bit fading out now and then. And I've had this little kind of cough thing. I'm not the only person that has this. It's like everybody I know has this in all places that I communicate with people. And so, at any rate, let me just do a little analysis here. I relate this to the most recent inferior conjunction of Venus, which was October 26th of 2018. So, right now we're dealing about, November and December. That's 2 months, about 2.5 months ago. And that's when all of this started. I noticed people that I knew having this congestion issue, and then it spread. And that's very typical of the new viruses that occur when we have an inferior conjunction of Venus. Now, the history of this goes back to the 1200s when the Chinese first noticed that the inferior conjunction of Venus was related with viruses. And the reason for this, of course, is that Venus is still acting as a comet. It is discharging the solar capacitor. It has a tail, although very faint. And I have personally seen Venus flare up and exhibit a tail for brief periods of time. When the comet Vild 2 was visited by what was known as the Stardust mission, they flew through the tail of a comet and had a kind of a foam-like material to pick up particles that were in the comet tail. So they opened up the doors, collected the material in the comet tail, closed it up, and then brought it back to Earth to study. And lo and behold, what they found were nucleotides and the beginning structure, very crude, very poorly formed, let's say, structure of DNA. That's what viruses are. Viruses are those very poorly formed structures, and your body does not really recognize them. That's the issue. Your immune system, it takes it a while for it to build up and say, hey, this is a foreign substance here, and to recognize it and start building up an immunity. So that's why, for example, the flu, which now the inferior conjunction of Venus happens every 584 days. So we're just hitting off the tail end of the inferior conjunction of October 26th of 2018, just a couple of months ago. And that's when this whole wave of respiratory issues began. Now, it seems to come and go. It seems to get better to the point where, oh, I'm better, good. And then all of a sudden, like today, I start when I'm using my voice quite a bit. All of a sudden, it seems to be coming back. Or yesterday, when I was interviewing on a John Moore show, a couple times I had to just mute out and kind of clear my throat a little bit. But everybody I know has this, like I say, every place. And so this is around the world type of thing. So the viruses don't always come in the form of flu, where you get the dizzy, upset stomach, nausea, that type of thing. They can be in the form like this of respiratory. The typical virus transforms into what is known as the chicken flu or the bird flu. And this is according to the Chinese. Then it translates into the swine flu, and that's when it mutates to a form that's more acceptable to the human population. And so at any rate, that takes a bit of time. And the tail, where exactly the Venus tail is at the time when Earth passes through that region during the inferior conjunction of Venus, that is a time when it's very difficult to determine, but this material falls in. And you find also that people that live in drier, dustier areas accumulate this virus more. And then also when it rains, it clears this out of the atmosphere, brings it down. And then when that's water starts to dry up, when the sun comes out again, once again, you get it down into the troposphere where we live. And people start, in this case, the respiration. And so it takes, there's a bit of a lag time, but it's very clearly related to the inferior conjunction of Venus. And so that is my vote. When you see something this universal all around the world, and then also something that is pretty foreign to the human immune system in general, that means that not only are you having a hard time, your immune system identifying this particular virus, but you, everybody around you is also having similar difficulties. That's why there would not be a shot that would be available. What's a shot? A shot is where they take, for example, the flu shot, which, by the way, don't ever take a flu shot. It's worthless. What they do with a flu shot is they take last year's strain of the flu, whatever that is, and they then have basically a dead virus which they inject into your system, and the idea being that your system will build up an immunity, identify it, and get rid of it. But there are a lot of people who become very sick with the flu shot. It actually, you're injecting a virus into your body. Yeah, what a stupid idea. And the reason it's really stupid is because it's last year's virus. It has nothing to do with the virus that's coming around this year. And so at any rate, yeah, I know people who have gotten deathly ill from taking flu shots. And if you think you're going to become immune to flu, well, go for it. But they really want to push those shots. They want to push those on the public, the unthinking public. And I know people who are nurses, lifetime, dedicated, long-term nurses, who refuse to take the flu shot, in spite of the fact that the hospitals claim that then they'll be immune to the, you know, flu because they're around patients all the time. But they refuse to take a flu shot, because they know it's a farce. And also add in all the other things like mercury and lots of other really bad stuff that's in those shots, injecting it right into your system. So the best thing for you to do is get sun. And of course, that's hard for many people to do these days in winter because there is no sun. People go for months without getting sun. That's your vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin C. You need sun to convert, to produce those vitamins in your system. So sunlight is very important. Anyway, little conversation about the viruses and where I believe this respiratory virus came from. There it is. And why it's relatively hard to shake. It's probably a good idea to go through a little more science here than simply stating that there are viruses in the comet tail of Venus, which, by the way, also corroborates with the story of Venus being a comet. It's still acting as a comet. Earth is acting as a comet. All the planets are discharging the solar capacitor. And of course, when Venus and Earth align electrically, that produces a larger electrical discharge at both Earth and the planet Venus. In fact, To corroborate that story, the sun is known, this is published in journals, that the sun has extenuated or advanced or more sunspots during the Venus-Earth, in the Venus-Inferior conjunction. And so clearly the electrical conditions that are driving the tail up in Venus, making it larger, so to speak, with that electrical alignment is affecting the sun. So you can see that. You can see the Earth conditions, etc. And typically, it's not enough to cause hurricanes or to cause severe weather like that. But the issue is that Earth becomes aligned with Venus. It accentuates the electrical discharge, the discharge of the solar capacitor at Venus, which makes its tail much stronger, much larger. And here's what happens. You have in the vicinity of Earth, Venus, etc., you have the basic atomic compounds of nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen, etc., carbon, and potassium. And you have these available. These are basically the building blocks that are used for construction of DNA or parts of DNA. And it's that random, it's kind of like that random combination of these elements. And when they form into these more complex molecules, there's a basic building pattern structure in the form of nucleotides. That's why DNA, etc., the building blocks, nucleotides of DNA are the same here. That's the point of my book, The Diamond Principle, is that the DNA that you're going to find on the far side of the universe is the same as you find here. And so those building blocks are the same, just the chemical composition. And of course, I've always stated this, that organic compounds, chemists, this is a great question if you know a chemist or a physicist or a evolutionary biologist, and they talk about evolution, just like rolling off, oh yes, evolution, you know, monkey to man, whatever, lizards to monkeys, lizards to birds or whatever, even though there's absolutely no scientific proof of any kind because they're separate, definitely separate species. And in fact, even the definition of species is the way it's been used throughout history is incorrect. But ask your evolutionary touting university professors, what makes an organic molecule organic, and why does it act the way it does compared to inorganic molecules? So an inorganic molecule would be something like sulfur dioxide. It is what it is. An organic molecule would be, say, a carbon-hydrogen chain or a nucleotide. What's the difference there? And when the nucleotides build up to form DNA, they have intelligent properties. They can reproduce. They can duplicate themselves. They can store up energy. They can build organisms which store up energy and can use that energy at will based on certain conditions. But then you get up to man, who can use energy based on his own decision-making process, can change his environment, etc., and has a spiritual aspect also. So ask your organic chemist or your evolutionary biologist or your, you know, evolutionary astrophysics professor or whatever, what makes an organic molecule organic and gives its life-building properties, and what makes it different than an inorganic molecule? Now, this is a basic question, and I guarantee you not a single one of them, if they're truthful, will have an answer for you. They'll go, just, well, that's the way it is. Well, just that's the way it is not a scientific answer. The real answer is that they don't know. They cannot tell you why an organic molecule can build up organisms that can store energy and not use it in a normal fashion. In other words, a normal use of energy, take a ball, put it on an inclined ramp, and let it roll down the ramp. Now, can that ball decide to stop moving down the ramp? No. It's going to continue obeying the laws of physics. It's going to gain angular momentum at a certain rate, and the equations of motion are understood, and it's predictable. So you can predict how long is it going to take that ball to get to the bottom of the ramp. And you can understand it using equations, and a guy in Russia or a guy somewhere else on planet Earth can reproduce the same experiment and get the exact same results. And it's all predictable, and you can write equations and understand it. But now try and write an equation to predict the movements of man. Well, it's impossible because man has a free will, and he can decide to expend energy, or he can decide to sit in a chair and play video games all day. And the little with the fingers going back and forth, click, 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 click. You know, a man can decide how he wants to use his stored up energy. And it has nothing to do with a system like a ball rolling down a plane. So ask your evolutionary biologist friends, and let's go back to basics. You know, if you can't answer this question, then you can't move ahead and talk about evolution until you get back to the point of what makes an organic molecule organic, in other words, life-bearing, and what makes it different from an inorganic molecule, which is not associated with being life-bearing. Life, sulfur dioxide being an inorganic molecule, and the nucleotide, a complex nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen, carbon molecule. What makes it the basis of life, which allows eventually the higher layer organisms to store up energy and use energy at will? What's the difference? They can't answer that basic question, and that's a fundamental question that would have to be answered if you're going to talk about evolution. In other words, that these things grow and they create bigger, more complex objects, etc. And that evolution, here's another question you could ask that they will try and hem and haw around if they're trying to act intelligent, but will not have an answer. Is how do they explain that evolution always evolves in the more complex direction? Because if it's random, that should not be true. If it's just a random series of events that happen and all of a sudden we got a man here instead of a monkey, then why is that evolutionary progress always in the direction of more complexity, increased complexity? It really should be the other way around, that the simpler the organism, the more efficient, and it should be an evolution from the more complex to the lesser complex, or at best, it should be a random walk. Sometimes it gets a little more complex, sometimes it gets a little less complex, but overall, it just pretty much stays the same. And the longer, the more iterations of change that occur, then it should stay almost exactly the same. And that's not what they claim. They're claiming, if you look at what is called the chart of life or the table of life, it starts out with a one-celled animal, and then it goes out in all different directions, and supposedly we're all related. That one-celled amoeba is grandparent to all of us, including trees and flowers and plants and worms and you. And, you know, why is the progress always in a more complex direction? How do they explain that? Of course, they can't. there is a well-organized design in the universe, and the universe is following that design, because you can find this same development, and you will find it on the other side of the universe. Because when you look out, you see all of the things we have here on Earth, all of the chemicals, we can see them on the far side of the universe. As far away as we can see, maybe that's not the far side of the universe, because if you went there, you could look out farther in that same direction and see vast numbers of galaxies, etc. Every time they think they have caught the limit of what they can see in outer space, there's the great example of the Hubble Space Telescope, where they took a little patch of dark area and trained it on that for weeks and months at a time, and found thousands and thousands of galaxies in a patch where they thought there was nothing. So every time you look farther, you find more. The scientific explanations, the Big Bang, etc., don't add up. They don't account for what we see in the universe at the microscopic level, at the atomic level, or in the cosmological level. And that's why I say, if somebody's going to college, yeah, your physics 101 or your chemistry 101, okay, yeah, okay. You can believe that. But as you start getting up into how does the world work, what are the big questions in science, they don't know, they cannot answer them, and the answers they're giving are bogus. So anyway, a little education there for the people out there who are wondering if they're the only ones around that are scratching their heads over the ridiculous science is being pawned off on you, the public. Just a reminder, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. My new book release coming out February 13th, available $24.95. That you will get the new book, the new release, plus a good deal of supporting material. So, and that also is hopefully... this will be an effort which is a way of me recuperating a little bit for my time to pay for this webpage, this radio show, which is commercial-free. There's no commercials. There's no support. There's no sponsors. There are no donations. And so that is your way of supporting me. So thank you very much in advance. This is James McCanney. My webpage, jmccsci.com. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.